Good morning, everybody. Trust you can hear me, and I can get this. I'm going to, in preparing for a digital future, I'm going to make two interlocking arguments. I'm going to talk about how companies need to behave and how companies need to be. And I'm going to assume every organisation, government wants a great reputation. And then I'm going to talk about what I think our profession needs to do to adapt to that and to meet that. I'm going to say that reputation management is the future of corporate communications and public relations, which shouldn't be a surprise because I wrote a book and curated a book for ECO and the PRCA that said that. And I've got three, I don't know whether it's a prize or it's worse, but I've got three of them for the best questions or the first questions, depending on Slido, if that appeals. And it helps me, because if I give lots of books away, Lansons have to buy more books, I guess. Because I'm a number 50 in Amazon's charts at the moment. I'm aware of the argument that, as we're talking about preparing for a digital future today, I'm aware of the argument that there are people saying your online reputation is your reputation. I gave Dave King of Digitalis a space in the book to make that argument. And that the filtration system and Google means that it always reflects your worst self if you're a celebrity, and therefore you need to obsess about that and take huge actions for that. I'm aware of the argument, and tactics and tools are fantastically important, but I'm going to talk about the core of how organisations behave, and I think our transparent age has a wonderful advantage that we see through things so much quicker and we see so much more, and it's forced organisations to concentrate on what they actually do and what they really do if they want a great reputation. Talking about us, and I'm going to assume not only that all organisations want a great reputation, but that we're all people loosely referred to as public relations people or formerly public relations people when I talk today. So I'm addressing us when I go through. What we must do, I think, is focus on reputation and its value. And to focus on reputation value, we've really got to talk coherently about it. My favourite definition of reputation comes from John Dorley, with Fred Helio Garcia, wrote a fantastic book, Reputation Management, 4th edition, published 2020, sometime next year. And that's that reputation does belong to you. Obviously, it's owned by others. It's what your 8 key audiences think of you. A Reputation Institute says most organisations have 8 key audiences that matter. Reputation is the sum of what they think, and it comes from the bits organisations can control: performance plus behaviour plus communication multiplied by authenticity, whether the organisation does what it says it's going to do and has a set of purpose and values, the subjects we spend so much time talking about. Crucially for us, if that's what we want to get into, we have to focus on the behaviour of the organisations we work for or the organisations we advise. I use this quote all the time. I deal with lots of crises. I think it's a function of age. It's what happens when you get old. People employ you to deal with crises. Stephen Covey, fantastic quote. You can't talk your way out of problems. You behave your way into. I'd recommend using that quote. Lots of situations. It cuts through, I find, with lots of senior people. If we're going to master reputation, yes, of course, it can be measured. Yes, of course, it can be managed. And we have to understand some facets to it. I really like the definition. It's based on psychology, book by Rupert Younger and David Waller, The Reputation Game. It's a great book. Organisations can have a character and a capability reputation, and they can be fundamentally different. Really helps if you're talking to your clients. I put some examples up there. I think Amazon is a great example at the moment. The whole world trusts Amazon's capability, but large parts of the world, and particularly key audiences, are nowhere near as convinced of Amazon's character. I think it really helps. We have to understand these concepts if we're going to move our profession into focusing on this. Now, I don't find anyone disagrees that reputation is a key to success and that organisations with great reputations do better than others, but I do think we need to spell out how. So, what can organisations with great reputations do? Charge more for their products and services, achieve more with less marketing spend, get given the benefit of the doubt, influence governments more than other organisations. Whichever sector you work in, I think you know examples of that when it happens. I love the example of the Swiss government. The Swiss government, for most of the last few years, has had a negative interest rate. In other words, people have given it money and it's given them less back after a period of 10 or 20 years. And that's incredible. The American government has to pay people 2 to 3% interest. But that's from reputation, because who knows in 20 years' time whether Switzerland is a more secure country than the United States, but it comes from reputation. So I think we all can find examples, and I think everyone understands that. you'll probably have gathered that I think reputation, brand, image, I think they're all interchangeable. I think they're that thing that make you listen to someone more than someone else and mean you're better disposed towards someone than you are to someone else. I think those terms are interchangeable. I produce some charts for the book. I find when I'm talking to companies, if I have to talk about it, I split the benefits of reputation by different functions in an organisation. I think these slides are shared afterwards. I'm not going to spend lots of time going through some of the detailed slides. But I find that useful and I'm happy because I want us as a profession, I want us to move into this area, so I'm happy if other people use similar things. I think we really have to, if we're understanding reputation, something that we got into really early was narrative and story, and we were absolutely right. If we're explaining reputation, context matters hugely. Reputation Institute Country Rep Track tells us that the Nordic countries, among the people of the GA, the Nordic countries are always the best regarded. They always fill four or five of the places of the top 10 countries. Because of that, when it turns out that the Nordic countries are the source of the biggest money laundering scam in history, and actually they're not at all what we thought they were, and nobody wants to know that story. So that story hasn't caught fire in any way, in any of the same ways if it had been, actually it did involve Russia, of course, but if it had happened in Russia or if it had happened in Cayman or if it had happened in other places. So if we're understanding these things, and I think as a profession we did this really well, story, narrative, context really matter. So first, we understand reputation, and we have to own the measurement of reputation. Secondly, because I think chief executives and prime ministers accept better reputations lead to greater performance, we've got to convince them that we're the people to help manage it, and that's not a given by any means at all. So what do we do to help reputation? Well, what makes a great reputation? Those things. You have to be great to have a great reputation. Rolex and Lego, two companies in the world, Reputation Institute tells us are the organisations with the best reputation. Couldn't be great if they didn't make great toys, great products, great watches. But they can't. That isn't enough to guarantee a great reputation. The things that we can focus on is defining purpose and what an organisation stands for, because an organisation has to be authentic and do what it says, and we have to be talking about behaviour. I think the future of our industry will largely be inside organisations, and I think we will be advisors on culture and behaviour inside an organisation to a set of values. Fastest growing area of our industry, in our company Lansons, employee engagement and all things around it are the fastest growing area of our business. So as Christine Lagarde said, organisations have to do the right thing and have to do the right thing when no one is watching. That's a huge area for us. And of course, great communication still matters. But we have to be clear that they're the things that we do that help organisations have a great reputation. And we mustn't be lazy. We mustn't allow, when we get into these purpose projects, we mustn't allow an organisation's values to be integrity and excellence. That's just too lazy. It doesn't distinguish that organisation. We have to, every organisation in the world, every company is fascinating and interesting, and we have to bring that out in the work we do. And that's why these projects shouldn't be £30,000 projects with a workshop. They should be £500,000, multi-million pound projects involving huge amounts of work, diligence and science, producing purpose. And I just throw Goodwood's up, Duke of Richmond and Gordon, I think fantastic entrepreneur, aristocratic entrepreneur. Goodwood's values are those, daring do, sheer love of life, the real thing, obsession for perfection. They're not boring, they carry it to that organisation. That's what we need to do in our job and in our world. We really have to own neuroscience. At Lansons, we partnered with Dr. Helena Boshi to produce a book, Why We Do What We Do, Understanding the Brain. And we have to understand, we have to demonstrate to people that the reality they see is one they've created, and that helps them understand how others see things and hear things. And we also know that some ways of arguing, we saw in the Brexit campaign, work better than other ways, a heavily neuroscience campaign. So we need to do that as well. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these, because to go into the real world, I don't want to sound too academic, because I actually have clients, I work in the real world. When we're working with organisations, we have to explain how complicated the world is. And they're just some of the things that I think are shaping reputation today. And It has changed. We all know about the speed of social media judgment, but we now have journalists that will work inside an organisation for 3 months. We have things that we formerly charities but are actually lobbying organisations. Reputation is determined by all those things. We have to show we understand them, and we have to translate the big picture and what's at the core into dealing with those audiences. I've been doing this all year, and I've been going around the world, and one question is, if reputation comes from behaviour, and you're sort of saying everyone gets the reputation they deserve, how do you explain Donald Trump? And I think it's a really valid question, so that's why I put it on a slide, in case it was going to be a question. But I've come to realise that context and story has been a fantastic achievement of Donald Trump. Convincing us that we live in an age when no one is innocent and everyone is at it and everybody has things to hide has created a playing field for him to be very authentic. I don't want to make a comparison with our own Prime Minister, but a similar kind of thing. It hasn't mattered. The things that would have affected other people haven't mattered because a real sense of authenticity has been developed. And if we're advising organisations in the world, we have to accept the world as it is, and we have to be able to understand those forces. We have to be able to understand what's actually happening in the world, and then we have to translate that into solid programmes. If we own the understanding of reputation and the management, the measurement of it, we convince people that us and the future us are the people that can help organisations manage that, and it can be managed. The next thing we have to do is convince that it's a management discipline, not a communications discipline, because that's obviously fundamental. If it's a communication discipline, it isn't in the place it needs to be, and it won't have the impact it should have. My definition is this. Reputation management is the conscious, holistic, integrated, planned, thought-through, dynamic, agile, continuous process of managing reputation. All those things needs commitment from the top of an organisation, has to involve measurement, analysis, a plan, coordinated actions, and it has to be about what organisations do, how they behave and how they communicate. I've spent about 5 years now telling people I'm a reputation manager and Lansons is a reputation management firm. And I've had all sorts of reactions. I know how people respond to that. I think it's something that we do, and I think it's something the best of us do. I think it's something that we can convince people on. I'm chairman of two parts of the horse racing industry, so I was lucky enough to be able to ask the Hong Kong Jockey Club to write their reputation management plan for the book. And I think, just look at the headings, it's really interesting. If I'm saying this is what we should do, the headings aren't about communication, they're about sport. In sport, integrity is the most crucial thing. Their reputation management plan is about those things that make horse racing believable and authentic and happen in Hong Kong. And that's a sign, I think, of where we need to go. Now, I produce charts, which I'm certainly not going to go through. These two, which go together. Everything I think needs to be included in a reputation management programme, which is sort of everything an organisation does, because I believe it is holistic and I believe it's integrated. And I won't go through them. So, that's what I sort of see as our future for what we do. On the way to being a management discipline, public relations, corporate communications, turning into reputation management, we have to talk about the journey, which is the future, which is where marketing services is. Now, I think we all know in our technological world that there's fewer layers in organisations and there's fewer silos, and all the organisations we work for and with are becoming more and more integrated. So, logically, what does that mean for marketing services? And I think, without going through it now, I think there will only be two disciplines in marketing services ultimately. They might be called other things. There will only be integrated marketing and reputation management. That's all there is. I believe the discipline, the thing formerly known as consumer PR, I already think is marketing. I think that, but if there is such a thing as consumer PR anymore, it's marketing. Corporate communications hasn't made its way to reputation management yet, but I believe everything that happens will be seen as functions of those two things. And ultimately, organisational structure will reflect that. So that's my sort of route for us as an industry. The next thing we need to do is we have to learn from the most successful, I guess we put investment banking to one side, the most successful sort of people business or people industry in the world is management consultancy. And in our industry, ever since I came into it, we've asked clients what they want and we listen, and then we try and deliver to people what they want in a sort of version. We've actually got to tell them what they want in a future world, I believe, with greater confidence. And what we need to be telling organisations at the moment is it's vital and necessary to speak out on the big issues of the day. And that, I believe, is what we should be doing at the moment. Love Richard Edelman, how he uses his position, largest PR firm in the world, completely agree. It is time for business to address the wage stagnation of the working class. Two biggest things in the world, inequality and climate change. Organisations should be addressing them, and we should be telling them that if they want a great reputation and they want their place in the world, they should be doing that as well in their business. I love Paul Holmes' analysis. I think Paul Holmes is a really smart guy. And I think it's a really good point, is that companies that fail to take a position of perceived as favouring the status quo, and we know the establishment and the status quo is not that popular at the moment. So that's a more real-world argument rather than the altruistic argument. Greta Thunberg, hugely, hugely important, influential. I think the most significant thing in the reputation management corporate communications world in the UK in the last few weeks has been the Royal Shakespeare Company firing BP as a funder. It's a really, really interesting thing to go through. And firing BP, I mean, BP claims to be a sustainable company. BP says it's doing all the right things. The Royal Shakespeare Company says, young people don't believe that. We want to appeal to young people, so we're firing you. And a very acrimonious thing. But I think it's a sign of how the world is going to go. And it's also a sign that the corporate social responsibility programme, if it's not holistic, integrated, and a part of the organisation, it won't actually make any difference in the future world. And when that's taken on, when organisations say, who do you think we should bank with? What kind of company do you think should be managing our pension fund? What kind of company do you think our taxi company should be? If organisations start doing that with their staff and their key audiences, it's going to only accelerate the things that I've been talking about. I always think, I love Britain, so I think it's always best to sort of talk about one of the best things in our country, suffragettes. I've spent loads of time saying it's about deeds, not words. And when I was growing up, my parents used to say actions speak louder than words. But I've actually realised that suffragettes were wrong about one thing, because that isn't quite right. I think what we need to be saying as a profession, as we make this move to reputation management on the corporate half of our profession, is it's deeds and words, because it's been shown, I think, it's not enough just to do the right thing. It's almost enough, but actually you have to talk about your purpose, your values, and why you're doing what you're doing, as well as doing the right thing. And in 20 minutes, I think I'm on time. So thank you very much for listening, and say, I'm happy to take any questions, and I've got three books to give away if people want them.
Thanks for listening to this CIPR podcast. For more from the CIPR National Conference 2019 and other great podcast resources, visit cipr.co.uk.